a little theme music for our segment now. Let's talk about Chicago's past. You know, the 20s, the 30s, and beyond, a city of coal and steam and sweat, gritty and grainy with gangsters and grifters filling in the newspapers with blood and violence. Well, back to me. There's a terrific new book out that you might like to talk about and read about and have on your coffee table or in your home. It was already on WGN TV. Steve Saunders did an interview about that. I've heard other radio interviews, and it's here now, my chance to talk about it now. Beautifully, chillingly evokes the noir era of our past and before. It's called Gangsters and Grifters, Classic Crime Photos from the Chicago Tribune. Rick Kogan, he writes a terrific foreword to the book. Flip, flip, flip. Let me just read the first few sentences. He says, "We have certainly had our share, haven't we? There is no city on the planet that can boast more world-famous bad guys and bloody deeds than Chicago. And in a mildly disturbing way, we relish the association. Despite the all-too-real modern city violence that annually claims hundreds of victims, many of them innocent children, tales of the past, bloodshed, and tears that have fallen on our streets have an eerie, nostalgic glow." Erin Mistkowski and Marianne Mather are two of the dames of the Tribune photo department, as they call themselves, that's not me, in this book. Two of the three photo editors from the Chicago Trib who found the images and compiled this book. Great job. First book for both of you?
Yes, it is.
Yes. Thank you.
Now you walk around saying, "I'm a published author."
Oh, certainly.
Now, these were glass plate negatives. Help us understand what that means. And there were, what, hundreds of thousands of them down
yes.
there in the depths of this very
yes.
building?
There are 275,000 in total, and that includes the acetate negatives and the 4x5 glass plate negatives. And what that is a negative that came out of what likely was a speed graphic camera. So the very early part of the century, this was kind of that classic newspaper photographer picture, and they've all been filed in the basement.
Ouija would take. Now, is this with the phosphate flash that they're
yes,
using?
Yes, that's the one.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so this is where they slide in something into the side and pull out another one. And
yes.
I'm just trying to get that
so
look.
So you can get two or three pictures out of a situation, and that's what we were working with at the time.
Now, were they indexed? Was there any cataloging going
no.
on?
No, they were sort of, decade by decade, they made sense individually. But now we're looking back over 50 years, and we have to discern how right. each time period, how that happened. So we finally had an inventory done a couple years ago and had some keywords, so we knew where to start, and that's why we went straight to Chicago Crime.
So did you have interns that you turned loose on this
exactly.
yeah.
task?
If you the negatives are housed in the basement archive, so it's a sub-basement. It is five floors below Michigan Avenue. So in that basement, it's cold, it's temperature controlled. You walk down in there and there's just boxes and boxes, hundreds of boxes. And in the boxes are the envelopes that hold those glass plate negatives, which are literally 4x5 inches, I believe, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. And so there's no chronological order. There's no alphabetical order.
Heavens.
But they have a little bit of script handwriting on them. Sometimes
illegible,
in pencil, smudged. Sometimes there's a date. Sometimes there's not. It was a huge undertaking to go down there
yeah.
and dig these up.
Did you find pictures that you would love to have used, but you just don't know who you're looking at?
Yeah,
yes,
absolutely.
All
the
time. Oh, boy.
And that was the challenge. I think what right. my role in it was digging through and doing the editing and finding those compelling photos, and then I would hand them to Marianne, and she would try and find the backstory. Sometimes it led to something really incredible. Other times we thought this was a daily story that lived and died. You know, it was a great photo, but we couldn't vet it.
There's not any 90-year-old photo editors, former Tribune
no,
employees that you
I
can.
And there's so many. You know, we used these old databases. We used the Tribune and newspaper archives. So I would try to find the actual photo in the newspaper. You know, from 1938 or whatever. In the archives, and if I couldn't, you know, I would try to find articles that surrounded it that might have had something to do with what we were looking
Boy,
at.
Boy, I bet you had epiphanific moments of discovery where you yelped.
Oh, we did.
Yes, yes. The one where I think that was really exciting was obviously where we were looking at a photo of beer runner, criminal courts, Al Brown.
Al Brown, who you know is Al Capone.
You know, I knew that this was his alias, but we were looking for Prohibition photos, so we weren't looking for him at that time.
But he's a younger man here.
Yes.
He's not quite as portly as he was later in life.
Oh, for sure. Handsome. It's an undated photo, but as soon as it came up on the screen, we screamed and we realized, okay, this is a young Al Capone. And we wish we could have gotten it dated, but we had nothing to go off of except for that information.
Now, that is an important photograph for not just the Tribune, but for the World Archives.
Right, yes.
What do you put it out there and then publishers are aware of it now? Historians are aware of it. What do you do with something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that these are such a glimpse into the history of Chicago, and we realize that even some of these are violent, but they are very much accurately representative of what Chicago was like. And so they're pictures of record, and I think that they resonate with all different kinds of people.
You talk about violence.
Right, but even more than just Chicago. I mean, this was, a lot of the photos in this book are from the early 1900s to 1950, but the bulk of them are from 1920 and 1930. And during that time, we have Prohibition, we have the Great Depression. So there's so much tumultuous stuff going on in the city and in the country that I think it's very an accurate display of what was going on in Chicago, but also the world.
Some of these photographs are graphic.
Yes.
I mean, corpses with holes in, blood gushing down the sides of their face as they're laying there dead in their car. Mm-hmm. Would these appear in the newspaper?
Many did not. And so that was sort of what was fascinating about it, was here is this picture that no one's ever seen. And to us, that is so compelling and interesting.
Right.
And we wouldn't run these in the paper, and we wouldn't run photos that we shot this year that were that graphic. That's kind of against the way that our ethics work now. But because they are so many decades old and they're in black and white, we feel like there's a little bit of a buffer that people can kind of tolerate that.
So these weren't always run in the paper. Why were they taken then? And
I was just going to say on that exact point is that, you know, the access back then was so much different than what we have now. We as photographers would never have the access to take these types of pictures nowadays. But back then, I think everything was so new. The cameras were new. And the police and the photographers were sometimes together. You know, you'd see there's a picture of Jake Lingle, who had been shot and killed in broad daylight. And there's a police officer lifting up the sheet that had covered the body.
For the photographer.
For the photographer to take the picture. You know, that type of stuff doesn't happen today. So
there is no crime scene tape in these pictures.
Right? Yeah. And the sheets, it wouldn't cover them up right away. And there's some really arresting shots. Now, there's this one of Leopold and Loeb, these two wealthy University of Chicago kids who murdered this young, was he 14?
14-year-old Bobby Franks.
And had Clarence Darrow as their attorney. Obviously, the parents were wealthy enough to retain him. And there's a wonderful photograph, page 46, is it? Of them, and you just don't know what's going on in their minds as they're looking at each other. And this is after conviction, is that right?
This is the moments after they each gave their separate confessions. So I really feel like what's so compelling about it is they're looking into each other's eyes so intensely, and they don't necessarily know what just happened, but they know what they did. They sold each other out, and it's subtle, but it's so intense, and that's what I love about it. It's one of those pictures I completely get lost in, and when I first pulled this out, my mouth just dropped open.
One would be murdered in prison, and the other would live into the 70s, as I recall.
Yeah, he was, let's see, Loeb was murdered in prison, Leopold was released, and moved to Puerto Rico. He became an ornithologist.
Interesting.
I know.
How about 37 here, Marianne? This is Gertrude Billy Murphy, 22 years old, being brought in for questioning, and she just has a look about her outfit, her hair, her expression.
It's great.
It's stunning.
So Billy Murphy, this particular photo is one of my favorites. I think it's such a quick catch. It's kind of a gotcha moment because she's being brought in for questioning. She's getting transported into the back of a police wagon. The police officers have their hands on her elbow, and she looks to the camera with this kind of expression of, how did I get here? Well, she had two guys who were fighting over her. One shot the other dead. But meanwhile, Billy, who is only 22 years old, is already married to a guy who's in prison. So, I mean, this is in 1927 and is very...
That's a rich
it's
character.
It's such a great example of maybe that kind of flapper era.
All right, let's pause here right now. We're talking with two of the photo editors from the Chicago Tribune, Aaron Mistakowski and Marianne Mather, and they're responsible for this book, along with, who's your third party?
Robin Dottridge.
Okay, we need to recognize her
yes,
as well.
Thank you.
Real quick, the cover photo, who are these guys? It's a police lineup. They're all in handcuffs.
So the guy in the middle, Joseph Schuster, he actually shot and killed a police officer, Arthur Sullivan.
All right, he's going to be in trouble.
Yeah, he was in trouble. That's for sure.
They sent him up the river?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was a very early on crime, and this was an off-duty police officer who had actually was on an L platform, and somebody said, hey, that guy just robbed me. And so he went after him, and he said, I'm unarmed, and the guy turned around and shot him dead.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right, a lot of pathos here. We'll talk more about these terrific photographs in this wonderful book coming up here next on The Bill Mahler Show on 720 WGN Chicago. And we take you back in time to a year where the Chicago Tribune was print. Anyway, the music just sort of draws you back. And the wonder of this book is that it draws you back to gangsters and grifters, classic crime photos from the Chicago Tribune. And we're talking with two of the photo editors who had the absolute privilege of, yes. Was it an assignment to go down there into the fifth
it
lower
was.
Floor?
We always knew we had this vast archive down there. And once we had an inventory, we set out to pick carefully what would be most important and what would resonate with people, and Chicago crime is definitely at the top of that list.
So how did the pictures get picked? Was there 5 seconds per slide and then you move on, or?
It's funny, you know, because we look at photos so often, we can kind of flip through pretty quickly, and you know it when you see it. It's hard to describe. It gives you the chills. You're like, who is this? You know, what is this scene?
Did you admire the skill of your predecessors who walked out with those old clunky cameras and couldn't just do power shooting?
Yeah, you just wonder how they were able to do that. The equipment is big and clunky, and you know, they have these glass plates that if they drop them, you know, they could break them. They had to switch the film out, you know, while they're in the process of shooting with these big, huge cameras. It's a nightmare to think about it.
Yeah, and then the flash component, too.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, when the flash component came along, you can see the photos change where everybody's blown out, you know.
White hot
skin.
Yeah.
You know?
Photography was a different craft, you know, in many ways.
It really was.
But these pictures, I think, are important, almost, to put it that way, for people in Chicago to see, because we've seen some of these. We've seen some of John Dillinger laid out on the slab or in the gurney.
Right.
I don't know that I've seen the one that you have, though, where there are these bathing beauties for some reason there smiling and giggling alongside a man's corpse.
It's bizarre.
That is a bizarre photo. When we found that photo, we were pretty shocked, and I couldn't figure out what was going on. It took me, the photo itself is, you know, John Dillinger on a slab. He's dead. And then there's a whole crowd of people surrounding him with two women in bathing suits with their hands up against the glass. That's the partition between him and the crowd. And I couldn't figure out what was going on. And so then I dug in the newspaper archives and realized that it was just a free-for-all at the Cook County Morgue. People lined up outside for days to see his body. And in the beginning, there was no partition. People could just walk up and touch his body, which is amazing. And I couldn't get any documentation of what these two women were doing. But, you know, maybe they were going to the beach and thought, hey, we'll go see Dillinger.
Let's go see a corpse.
Yeah.
Because you wonder, what would the caption have been for a picture like that?
Right.
You know, speaking of Dillinger, I mean, this was a cocky guy. And I love the shot on 122 where he's, you know, the one. He's leaning over and he's got a shirt. Everybody else is in a suit. He's kind of impatient.
Right.
And he's thinking, you know, they're not going to hold me. And in fact, they don't.
And, you know, this photo is so...
This is in Indiana, right?
Yeah, this is in an Indiana courtroom. This is such a significant photo because we don't believe that this photo has been seen before. We searched around, and this had been deep in a box in the archives.
I love it. He's looking right in the camera.
He's in white. Everybody else is kind of dark around him, but he's slouching. It's his body language. He looks like he's in charge. He looks totally bored, like I'm gone in a second. And lo and behold, he breaks out of the Crown Point, Indiana jail with a wooden gun.
How much later was that after the photograph?
I think it was only a month later, maybe give or take. But yeah.
But you know what I like? You get a sense of his charisma
yes.
there
yes.
as well
yes.
in that
picture.
He was
a celebrity. He was Well, people were just drawn to him.
Yeah, and what I didn't realize after doing all this research is he really reigned, his reign of terror as public enemy number one was only 1 year, 1933 to 1934. And according to what we have in our archives, we followed him as photographers, as the Tribune and the newspapers. We followed him everywhere he went. He went and robbed a bank there. The photographers were there to shoot pictures of it. You know, it's amazing. He was definitely a celebrity.
You know, and another thing I take away from looking at these pictures is the bystanders. And you could almost say that would be us.
Yes.
That would be me sitting there with my pork pie hat and a bow tie, looking down at the blood on the ground.
Right.
You know, that, it's just a different date. That could be us standing there gawking at some horrible scene. Mm-hmm.
Just average Chicagoans, for sure.
How's the sale going of this book?
It's going well.
Excellent.
I think the Christmas time was good for it. So that
it's great that this resonates with so many people. It has, you know, no matter who you are, you know a little bit about crime and in pop culture, and I think that kind of has stimulated our taste and interest in it. And so to find these pictures, these were the real people who all of that pop culture is based on. So I think it has an extra little impact that way.
And it's available at all the usual spots, I gather.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You used to have a store here in the tower, but that's gone. So you have to go to a bookstore to get it.
We have an online store, but anywhere where books are sold. Barnes & Noble, Amazon, everywhere.
Do you know the online store website?
You know, I don't have it with me. Sorry.
The URL. Right.
But anyway, I mean, it won't be hard because it's a great book. So just remember the title, Gangsters and Grifters. If you see the cover, you will never forget the cover. It's a great, it's that sort of Halloween lighting where it's from down up.
Right.
And it just gives sort of an eerie look to these hardened men as you look up at them. Gangsters and Grifters, classic crime photos from the Chicago Tribune. Great foreword written by Rick Kogan. And a great effort by my two guests, Aaron Miskowski and Marion Mather. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Congratulations on a wonderful job. And how neat to be able to say that you are now published authors.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's wonderful.